stand in here so that everybody can hear better. In a Quaker meeting, we're supposed to be inspired by the Lord to rise, and certainly not to have notes, and I'm going to ask God if she will forgive me. I'm very glad today that I'm not the only child. I'm glad anyway. But my mother's energetic life had so many facets that I'm hoping that my siblings and children and nieces and nephews will fill in. There was all the world of her civic consciousness and social consciousness and her influence on the family as an artist, which I'm hoping some of the children will speak about. I'm going to speak about just one aspect of her life that had a very powerful influence on me. And it was, in essence, that she gave me a delight in the physical world and an acceptance of it. My father, in his being, taught me something about aloneness and the life of the mind. But he often said, I want to go into a corner and pull the corner in after me. My mother, though riding roughshod a bit, got him out of that corner, and the rest of us too. She loved landscape and beautiful places and good food. And all the way down from Maine, every year, she and Daddy argued in the car. Her idea was that we should not only take the most scenic of possible routes, but we should also make side trips to see the ocean and walk along the cliffs for a while. After, of course, a lobster lunch there. My father always fruitlessly complained that that was very inefficient and that a diner on the highway would be much quicker and more sensible. We also took every little byway that looked interesting, my father protesting every inch of the way, to see if there might be a view at the end. And if it was nice, my mother decided that she wanted to have a house there. She decided to every beautiful place where she ever was, whether it was Lake Atitlan in Guatemala or whether it was the coast of Maine. And my father can well imagine how he felt about that. It never happened, but this was her way of wanting to inhabit beauty. Of course, I remember the cliffs and the lobster lunch. One doesn't remember diners. To this day, I have a horror of the efficient fast food lunches on that same trip, and remember with longing not just the lobster pound, but a little inn in Sturbridge full of plump Helen Hoganson ladies in tweeds. Now, Helen Hoganson was a cartoonist for The New Yorker, some of you may remember, who did genteel ladies, whom my mother nodded to in recognition of some sort of kinship. There they had homemade rolls, served hot and covered with a napkin. My father couldn't conceive of such an excuse for delay. She made me look at and feel the natural world, not as a naturalist, but really as an artist. One winter day, when I was very little, she insisted, because it had snowed the night before, she insisted that I get up and get dressed and go into the woods with her. And we got into the woods, and of course the path was covered with snow, and the branches were all covered with white snow and glistening ice, and it was absolutely magical. I don't think I wanted to go. I think I balked. I think I never said anything at the time, but I've never forgotten how wonderful it was. And I hope I find myself doing the same thing with my grandchildren. If we're in the woods on the late in the late afternoon, the light is coming through the trees, I say, children, look, it's beautiful. And of course they're bored to tears. It's my mother's voice coming out of me. I want them to pay attention. She was a voracious viewer on travel. She had a fierce compulsion to see everything. My father had to be pushed to go on these trips, like my grandfather Wasserman before him, who mostly didn't want to go. And as the family legend has it, when Grandma got him on top of the Matterhorn, she gestured at the spectacular view and said, Joe, isn't this magnificent? And he said, it's no better than the Wissahickon. My father was quite like that, but he was really glad he'd gone on these trips. I didn't travel much with her as an adult because there was the war and then I was married. But I did go on a trip with her when she was in her mid-80s. It was exhausting. She wanted to show me everything she had known in Florence. We pushed down the streets through tourists like herds of cows. We marched through the Uffizi, and mind you, she wasn't that fast a walker. It was the force of will that made it. We rushed to see a Masaccio fresco in a church, then on to Fra Angelico paintings in a monastery. This was all in one day. One afternoon, she pronounced them faded since she'd been there before. Then on to the next. When we were coming into Rome in a rented car, she stopped repeatedly to ask directions, shouting in English, shouting out of the window at the road workers, and the road workers shouted back in Italian, and no one was the wiser. And so we had to do it all over again in 10 minutes. What must it have been like to travel with her when she was younger? She was a good sport. She didn't complain about being uncomfortable or tired, and she didn't complain about pain. The people who've taken care of her in the last few years know this. When Lewis and I were about 10 and 12, we were on a Canadian Pacific trail ride in the Rockies. Now, these trail rides were a great adventure to begin with, and I'm extremely grateful that she took us on them. It was a large group of people, I guess maybe 20 or 25, and we rode all day on horseback through forest and on rocky terrain just under the snow line, and it was very beautiful. And at night we slept in teepees that were put up by guides, and the guides did the cooking, so there was that aspect of luxury, but we were exhausted at the end of the day. This was really tough. In any case, on one of these trips she developed a kidney stone, and I've been told this is extremely painful. She could have decided to be escorted back, but she let the trip doctor give her morphine. And she rode on. It must have been, imagine being on horseback with a kidney stone. In any case, one night, there was a ferocious storm with wild rains and fierce winds that blew the teepees off the ground. And that night, my mother passed the stone. And I found out since then that on top of that, when one of the guys was trying to put the teepee up again, my father stepped in the bowl where the stone was. It was lost forever to medical science. But the point is, she never complained about any of it. These pack trips in the Canadian Rockies were wonderful. The jumping off point was a little ranch where we all stayed. And on one trip, I had a most terrible disappointment. It was the family and just a few other people. And we rode for 4 days in what seemed to me the most remote wilderness. I was about 12 at the time. And we camped in tents at night. I think this remote wilderness was probably well-trodden paths, but I didn't see that. Well, we got to our destination, which was a lodge on Mount Assiniboine, at the end of the 4 days. I thought we were going to be greeted by Indians at the very least. And guess what? The lodge was full of Philadelphia Quakers. She wasn't fearful for us as children. Whether this was innocence or bravery, I'm not sure. But she was lucky, and we were lucky too. We had a big playroom in the Westview Street house, and it had a peak roof and rafters. And she had someone build a tree house in this playroom, with a long rope ladder descending from it. This was very high. And we had a terrific time in this treehouse. We horsed around a great deal. I'm sure we teetered on the edge a lot. And one day I had a friend over, a boy named John Fernberger, who actually lost his footing on the ladder and had to grip with his hands until we somehow rescued him. But as a Jewish grandmother, I look back on this with amazement. She was an adequately good rider on the English saddle. I was a better rider. One day she was invited to ride in the so-called junior hunt. I was not at all tempted to go with her, even though we were all invited, because I knew that the riding was very fast and that there were jumps. mother wasn't the least bit nervous about that. She jumped into this situation. She had the ride of her life, hanging on as hard as she could, driven by the will of the horse, on an absolutely wild ride. Finally arrived at a very posh hunt breakfast, completely disheveled, and with all the buttons on her white shirt popped off. But the point is, she did it, and I didn't. She liked her body, even though it was hardly a fashionable one. More like a very large Rubens. Many an early morning fisherman coming out of the fog on Salmon Lake was regaled by the pre-breakfast skinny dip. Now my grandmother before her had gone into Buzzard's Bay, but it was closed, before breakfast too. And that was pretty cold. I'm afraid the family tradition died with me. The idea of getting out of a warm bed and into cold water is not some my favorite idea. She was much ruggeder. Later, when she had breast cancer twice, she was not at all abashed about being naked with nothing but scars on top. That was a great example to us, I think. She wanted to be very progressive with us when we were little about sexual matters. Sometimes I felt a little like the little girl who took the book back to the library and said, "This book tells me more about penguins than I wanted to know." But it was much better than the closed upbringing of some of my contemporaries. One day, when Lewis and I were quite little, Lewis and I and Dickie Saul, who lived across the street, were playing doctor behind a hedge that proved to be quite transparent. That it was an absolute fortress. And Mrs. Saul and my mother discovered that we were doing this, and they solemnly got together and decided that the best thing to do in this situation was to find interesting projects for us to do. I want to thank her for giving me a sense of adventure and pleasure in an acceptance of the physical world. I want to thank her for the beautiful house I grew up in, which was a great gathering place for the family, for learning about the making of great festivities as we sang in a skit on her 90th birthday, "A Hamish Christmas and a Merry Passover." I want to thank her for music, for taking me to concerts and the Bach Festival for years, and for having a studio and art materials around so that making art in one way or another was constantly part of our lives, and also for making me understand that the quest of a spiritual life was valuable, and that's what ended her here, landed her here.